We have a number of council members who have a prior commitment at 11:30, so we're going to do the second reading. Let's go ahead and get those done.
Six by four, amend the business license law to eliminate the exemption for residential rentals. Fish?
I'm pleased to vote aye on this. I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and my council colleagues for this, and ultimately this will ensure sustainable funding for the two inspectors who will help us tackle the problem of substandard housing in the private rental market. And I think this is a significant step forward, and I want to especially thank our friends at the Community Alliance of Tenants who have been stalwart advocates on this issue. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
I'm pleased to support the intent to use this as dedicated funding for the inspectors, and I'm also happy to see the exemption for Percy comes at $50,000, which ensures that it, the small partners one event rises.
Adams.
I do have rental property, so I just want to declare that conflict. And I vote aye. So approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for item 657?
Authorize the chief of police or designee to execute access and indemnification agreements with property owners for installation of surveillance equipment on their property. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I just want to thank Mayor Adams and Chief of Police Mike Reese for developing a policy that governs the use of of cameras and protects, I believe, individuals' privacy and holds officers accountable for the use of those pictures. We're looking at those pictures. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate Chief Reese accepting many of the suggestions for the policy. Unfortunately, my amendment to have reporting on how these cameras are used was not accepted by the council last week. We need to have our community trust our police. That's an essential part of a civilized society. And I do trust our police, however, we need to make sure that we get the transparency and accountability that enables more folks in the community to know exactly what the police are doing and how they're doing it. So that's why I'm unfortunately unable to support this. No.
Adams.
I want to thank Commissioner. I want to thank the Commissioner, especially Saltzman and Fish, who gave excellent suggestions on how to improve this. This will save lives, reduce injuries, and it will guard the legal rights as designated on the state, federal, and local levels. So it will help us with hotspots such as Old Town, where we continue to make progress, but we also continue to struggle in terms of public safety. Can you please read the title and call the vote for item number 658?
Accept a grant in the amount of $100,000 from the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, Military Department, Fiscal Year 2011, State Homeland Security Grant Program for the implementation of state and local homeland security strategies. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 658 is approved. Please read the title and call the vote for item 661.
Amend various sections of the Public Works Improvement Code for consistency and definitions and general language and organization cleanup. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 661 is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for item number 662?
add new section to the Public Improvements Code to update and codify authority previously delegated to the Bureau of Transportation and the Bureau of Environmental Services with regard to real property interests and to delegate new authority. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate the changes that were made last week.
Aye. Adams?
Aye. 662 is approved. Please read the title and call the vote for item 663.
Amend contract with Xerox Corporation for continued maintenance and support of the DocuTech 128 highlight color printer system. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate David Schnapp answering my questions over the last week. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 663 is approved. Can you please, so that gets us through all the second readings I believe. I think 655 is a quick one, right? Because we all know it very well. Can you please read the title for 655?
Accept mutual agreements between Portland Public Schools and the City of Portland relating to fiscal year 2012-13 budget support.
So this is the, I think, good idea that was suggested by Commissioner Randy Leonard that provides the umbrella agreement on all the specific issues. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on this issue? We had a complete airing of it last time. All right, Carla, can you please call the vote on the resolution, which is item 655.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate the sacrifice of many of our city workers who are forgoing raises this year in order to be able to fund the teachers in the schools. Appreciate Commissioner Mayor Adams for working with the school districts, all of them, to provide the additional support. As I said last week, we need to unite to go to Salem in January and insist that the legislature do its job in referring comprehensive, adequate statewide school funding measures to the mayors next year. I'm disappointed that we were not able to find support for funding for the Harriet Tubman School, the Young Women's Leadership Academy. It's a great long run where we do have adequate, stable school funding statewide, and be able to return to that structure for helping young women, particularly women of color, to succeed in American science. With that said, I'm very grateful that we all continue to provide support for our public schools, which remain some of the greatest public schools in the country. Aye.
Adams.
Again, repeat or just underscore all the thanks of everyone on the City Council in making this happen. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the titles for items number 631, 632, and 633? Do we have staff come up?
631, update solid waste and recycling collection code to extend the timeline for clean fleet collection vehicle replacement by 2 years and allow greater flexibility in meeting the timelines. 632, adopt process for limited short-term exemptions from storing containers in the right-of-way for extreme economic hardships. 633, provide confidential treatment for complainant names and contact information submitted to the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability as allowed under Oregon law.
So this is related to, but separate from the discussion of rates, separate in the sense that this deals with various management issues, operational issues. It does relate back, though, to the overall funding and financing of the Bureau, but it's separate enough that we wanted to bring them forward as a separate package. It does put, for example, the issue of storing containers in the right-of-way, the ability of citizens to complain about that under the same approach that the city provides for citizens to complain about overgrown lots in terms of confidentiality of those that are doing a complaint. So I'll have staff go through in more detail, but that's sort of the separate but related aspects of fees and these operational issues. Director Anderson.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council. I'm Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And with me here today are Michael Armstrong, the Senior Sustainability Manager, and Bruce Walker, Program Manager for Solid Waste. As the mayor said, we have a package of ordinances today. The first is to revise the Clean Fleet policy. The second is related to storing garbage and recycling containers in the right-of-way. And the third is to get our confidentiality rules in line with the Bureau of Development Services. I'll start with Clean Fleet. A couple of weeks ago, you considered the garbage and recycling rates. One of the issues that you brought up dealt with the timing for buying newer, cleaner trucks for garbage and recycling. At that time, we said we would revise the timeline and stretch it out a bit, so that's what we're doing. For background, 4 years ago, Council adopted a Clean Fleet policy for garbage and recycling with the purpose of phasing out the worst polluting trucks. Moving to cleaner, more efficient trucks will have a huge impact on air quality. It's equal to driving 50 million miles a year in a car. That's how much our, the impact is on air pollution versus how much driving goes on for all of the trucks throughout the city and how much pollution they make. So this is a huge impact, and it's something that we can affect pretty directly. To upgrade their vehicles, haulers need to invest in new ones, and that's an allowable cost, just like their employees' wages or fuel that goes into the truck and other required inputs into doing business. The ordinance that's in front of you today proposes to give the residential haulers an extra 2 years to buy new trucks, so that will stretch it out until 2016. Again, a reminder, we only set rates for residential. This applies for residential and commercial trucks. But the rate setting is just around residential service. So that's the proposal. We give the residential haulers an extra 2 years and reduce the rate impact for residents by doing that, spreading out the cost over a longer period of time.
And could you describe the rate impact?
The rate impact in the future, we estimated about 30 to 35 cents a year instead of a larger amount if we did it in just 2 years.
89 cents this year.
This year was 90 cents.
Yeah.
For the next couple of years.
Recovery of the Clean Fleet investments.
Right. And I think there's a couple of people from the industry that wanted this.
And the other aspects, the other three?
Did you want them all together? Okay.
Okay. My understanding is there's likely to be testimony on each of the three. If you want to take
testimony on all three, is
great. Okay, so the next ordinance is about storing containers in the right-of-way and specifically dealing with the piece that establishes rules for businesses that want to claim economic hardship exemption from the rules that prohibit storing containers in the right-of-way. 4 years ago, council adopted code to make sure that no garbage and recycling containers are stored on sidewalks or elsewhere in the right-of-way. Since then, every new business and every new building has found some way to store those containers off the right-of-way, either on the property or inside the building. Likewise, almost all existing businesses have been diligent and quite creative at finding solutions to move those containers off the sidewalks. In the whole city, at this point, there are now fewer than 20 remaining cases. The rules that are in front of you today would explain how that would play out then for these remaining cases. The rules are intended to balance very real financial considerations for businesses. In some cases, it does cost money to come up with these solutions. There are also very real considerations for walkability, quality of life for neighborhoods. So we've tried to balance those in the rules that are in front of you. The rules are intended to make it straightforward for businesses to determine if they would qualify by going down this exemption process. There's an objective formula, so we're trying not to have bias in how they're reviewed or decisions are made. And finally, it sets a date for final resolution of all of these cases, and it ensures that violations cannot continue indefinitely. So the maximum length of time you can apply for this exemption for 1 year, it can be renewed one time. At the end of that, it must be taken care of.
And does that apply only to the remaining 19 or in the future?
We do, on occasion, still learn of new violations, and that's in part what the confidentiality piece is intended to address. So I imagine we will learn of others, and so those others would have the same opportunity as we learn of them.
So we're down to 19 or 20 businesses that have containers in the right-of-way.
That's our understanding.
That's
what we're aware of.
We know.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
It's a short list.
It's a short list. We had a public review process in putting these together, and so we did receive 6 letters of comment. I believe those were provided to each of you. 2 were from businesses saying this is really much too difficult and onerous. 3 were from residents saying this is much too lenient. And 1 was from the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition saying this seems upright, go ahead and get it done. So we're happy to answer questions about those. And again, I think there'll be people who would like to testify. That's the substance of the rules.
Great. All right, with that, shall we go to public testimony? If you have any questions?
One more.
Shall we add in the confidentiality piece? Okay, so the third ordinance then, and as Susan indicated, this essentially brings the solid waste code in line with existing code rules for Bureau of Development Services and Office of Neighborhood Involvement in terms of protecting the names and contact information of people who alert us to possible violations. As you know, the enforcement model typically relies on complaints to discover infractions. People are sometimes concerned that there could be retaliation if their names are known. So this is intended to help residents feel safe in alerting us to possible infractions. And we do investigate each of these. You know, we never take punitive action based on something someone said, but it alerts us that there may be an issue. We take a look at it, and then we follow up from there. So we developed this with an eye to the containers and the right-of-way issue, but it would apply to throughout the solid waste code.
Okay, let's take public testimony or stick around. And this is any of the three?
Oh, we're just doing the first three and not the fourth item. There are four items to this 10 a.m., I'm certain.
I'm sorry. Why don't we cover the fourth item?
634.
Okay, can you please read the title for item number 634? I should turn the page.
Update solid waste and recycling collection code to ensure the collection of high quality, recyclable, and compostable materials.
Okay, so We shared some initial results on the new curbside, residential curbside collection program, and we've seen a tripling of the volume of compostable materials, 12% increase in recycling collected, a 40% decrease in garbage collected. So it's quite significant results. Most households have adjusted quite well. We also know some are still making that transition, and so we continue to try to work with them. We've also noted that some of the recycling sorting facilities have seen an increase in garbage mixed in with recyclables, and including things like diapers. So this is the issue that we're trying to address here, where the proposed code language in front of you would make it explicit in city code that putting trash in your recycling or trash in your composting container is a violation of city code. As it stands now, we can explain to people why it's a bad idea to do that and why we don't want them to. We can't actually say you can't. So this would simply allow us to say you cannot. It is a violation of city code. If this is adopted, we would then go through a process to establish administrative rules about exactly how that works. And clearly, the intent here is when we're aware of an issue, we work with that household. We notify them. We try to identify the issues and resolve them. So there would be a process to work with people that eventually could lead to penalties. That's where we're focused on engaging with the household, providing opportunities, questions, developing solutions. So city simply puts it in code that it is a violation of city code to put trash and recycling or trash in the compost.
So that I'm clear, does section 17.12.295 contained within it, which is the section you're amending within it, fines?
It does not.
So you would adopt administrative rules that would include fines? I think this one, Mayor Adams, with all respect, I think we should have some discussion about it. I have not talked to anybody else on council, but I have some concerns.
Now would be the time to raise it.
I have concerns about having within our collection system a system of punitive fines as opposed to other strategies that we might use to encourage people not to inappropriately mix recyclables and garbage. So I have a fundamental concern with this approach, at least at this stage of our collection system.
What would be the public process to establish the administrative rules?
It would be the same as all our administrative rules, which we do. You tell the amount of time that we get notice, and so it's a 60-day notice. We put information out to the public, and then we have a hearing.
So I share some of Commissioner Lennon's concerns, and I'm wondering if we could do for this what we did with containers on the right-of-way for this instance, since it is a new program, have the administrative rules come back to council for our approval.
For the first time, that's what we did on
I want to be clear, my concern is more fundamental. I have a concern with amending section 17.12.295
political language that is here, and I would rather back up and us have a more thorough discussion about available strategies that might include a public information campaign and other strategies that we would use before we start amending the city code, because in fact, once the code is amended, it is amended, and then future councils, actually not even future councils, future folks at the Office of Sustainability could administratively then adopt fines with or without council oversight. And so I have a concern just authorizing the creation of the rule itself before, I'm going to be clear, before we have a more thorough discussion of other potential available strategies that would not include people violating city code at this point.
I'm happy to, well, there are two issues on the table here. Now is the time to have the discussion about fines, no fines as a tool. This is a non-emergency for that, to provide that purpose. I do like the suggestion of bringing the first administrative rules back and then allowing a certain amount of just common sense tweaking of them after that, where they come back to City Council as well. So we can, if you would look for amendments in the appropriate place to amend, or if the legislative intent is enough, that's fine too. So that's following up on.
And I may be okay with whatever administrative rules.
Let me just finish finishing up on dealing with the concerns of Commissioner Fritz. So in terms of fines and no fines, why would you like to hear from them why they think it's, why we are proposing this tool?
I have heard the public discussion, but happily for the record, I think you should probably state that here.
Probably two things. First, just one is that I want to make sure that people understand, because there has been news out in the press about the what we're trying to do here, and that you can put recycling in your garbage. We're not saying, we're not being the garbage police. We're trying to say that the materials that are going to the recycling center, we want those as clean as possible because people have to sort that stuff. So that's one point. A second, currently we have a process for educating people in terms of if they put garbage in the recycling bin, that we send them a letter. The haulers actually notify us and tell us this is what's happened. We send them a letter. We explain that we're here to provide customer service and technical assistance on helping them figure out where things can go, if they need to get a bigger can, if they want to go into a different kind of service. If we do that a second time, we can we actually send a second letter out to do that again. So we have a process of working with things, and we've heard, and I think you'll hear in the testimony, that it is beginning to work. It is beginning to work in terms of, compared to a few weeks ago, they're starting to see a reduction.
So I appreciate you adding that, because I was going to ask, have you tracked the impact of that kind of an approach to see what it has done to the inappropriate mixing of the materials, and in fact, you noticed a reduction?
I wouldn't call it a scientific study. It's just from viewing by the folks at the recycling centers where this material goes to. There has been experience by San Francisco and Seattle that have this already. This kind of ordinance is already in place.
This kind of ordinance, meaning one that there are sanctions attached to?
One has fines and one does not. San Francisco, I believe, does have a system for fines, and Seattle does not. They basically continue to basically work with the customer.
And so how did Seattle codify that approach?
See, my understanding is that Seattle essentially put comparable language to what's in front of you today in their code. So their code prohibits putting trash in recyclables, but their administrative process for how that's handled does not end with a financial penalty. And
so
the same story in San Francisco, except that theirs does include that financial penalty.
So do you have a problem with Seattle's approach?
Not on the surface. That's exactly the kind of thing we would want to put on the table and better understand the impacts of the different approaches, how that's worked in other cities.
I think we should look at this just as we do any other fine and decide whether or not, why do we do fines at all, and whether or not it's ever needed. Most of the time, my experience with fines as a city is it's kind of like the last end of the line, and we try to do everything we can to work with the customer to not get there. And my intent would be to never use it, but to have it be there. And I think, you know, maybe you all have a lot more experience in terms of using fines for a whole lot of things. And so I would just ask that you kind of look at it and say, is this one of those times where having a fine at the end of the system actually makes it more effective?
So in my experience at the city, either as an employee or in this position, I have worked in and around systems that include fines. And my experience is screaming at me right now that this particular code amendment, which will lead to administrative rules that could possibly lead to fines, will hit people that are least able to pay them because of some of the materials that are being mixed in. And then it's going to create extreme hardships for the people that are least able to afford those kinds of fines. And I'm looking for a solution that does not include fines, which is why I'm interested in your observations about Seattle, because I could support an ordinance like this if it included language that said there will be no fines attached, and the ordinance itself precludes fines, but that the program would incorporate all the other features that you, I think, rightfully think should be included in a public education program. But I do not want to be a part of a process beginning right now that my experience tells me that could be devastating for some families, up to and including strategies for families no longer to have garbage service, that could lead to unintended consequences that I don't think any of us really want to have happen. If there are other strategies that might be that might require more patience on our part, but may be effective in the long run.
So why don't, because it's non-emergency, let's take testimony and have you get additional research. Wait a second. Additional research on the issues that you make. Issues made by council colleagues, and so additional issues might come out of public testimony. Commissioner Sulkin?
Well, I just want to make one observation. Certainly all of our offices are aware of, I think, an undercurrent to this issue is that people who, because we're no longer offering weekly garbage service, are using their recyclable compost bins for garbage. And so I think as you have promised us, we will be reviewing our program in October. Looking at issues like that, possibly revisiting some of these issues. I think that's sort of an undercurrent.
I think it's important we do review the whole system, but saying that there's many people when it's like 100 pounds out of a week out of many tens of thousands of pounds, it's a very small percentage. So I don't want to indict the public. The public's mostly doing the right thing. It's a very, very small percentage.
We definitely hear about it from our core folks that I think are genuine and well-intentioned. And so those issues, but we also don't want to discuss the issues until we've had, almost a year of experience with them. So let's hear testimony, and then we'll get some additional direction from council.
And so, but if I could just comment on your last observation, I guess I'm a little confused by at the end of the year, when we'd analyze the program, you would bring something like this forward at that time versus during this period when we're actually testing the program to see how it works. I don't get the timing of it.
I think part of what staff wants to test is being able to use some of these tools and see if these tools make a difference in the next 4 months. So that's, you can agree or disagree with that. That's what staff has said to me. As part of the entire test of a year is to test some of these things, see if they make a difference. I think education is key. That's what we've done from the very beginning, even door-to-door. We've gone door-to-door. Folks that are having trouble are getting warning letters, get phone calls. But let's take testimony. That's the explanation. It's either convincing the folks or not. All right. How many people have signed up?
I don't know, about seven people total.
Okay.
Number eight.
The first two on 631 are David White and Mike Lee. And on 632, if Jacob Tanzer could come on up as well.
Welcome. Please begin.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. My name is Dave White. I am Regional Representative for the Oregon Refuge and Recycling Association, and in that position, I represent the Tri-County Council and its member companies that provide residential and commercial solid waste recycling and compostables collection in the city. I have brief comments that apply to three of the ordinances before you today. Tri-C member collection companies view their relationship with the city as a partnership with a common purpose, that is to achieve the city's waste recovery and sustainability goals as efficiently and cost-effectively as possible while protecting community livability and safety. The clean fleet policy, the prohibition of containers in the right-of-way, and the effort to ensure the collection of high-quality materials are aimed at that common purpose. Portland Haulers have supported the clean fleet policy and are making the required investment in clean, energy-efficient vehicles. They are committed to doing their part in the effort to protect the livability of the city and the health of its citizens. That includes complying with whatever timeline is established. Tri-C participated in the development of the Crow Rules and supports the requirement that haulers not place containers in the right-of-way for new service customers. This requirement is another example of a way that the city is making an effort to improve livability and safety. And lastly, Portland Haulers assisted with the development and implementation of the city's new residential collection program. They want that program to be successful. And in that regard, they support efforts to educate customers on the proper preparation of materials for collection in order to ensure that the cleanest materials possible are delivered to processing facilities. They will continue to assist the city in those efforts. And thank you, and I'll answer any questions.
Well, I just want to underscore that the organization and the members or the haulers that you represent have just been fantastic. So for example, the city council should know that after this ordinance, after the new system went in place, and we had it for some time, and some of our collection partners, processing partners, were experiencing an uptick in the contamination with garbage of the recyclables. You, your company members, and the haulers actually put the sticker on the buckets that said, "Do you know that you are?" And these are the rules. And then we were able to go back. You gave us the addresses for those places. We were able to send them a letter and call them. All of that kind of education and outreach couldn't happen without your participation and participation of your members, and thank you.
Thank you.
Sir?
Thank you, Mayor Adams, and Council. For the record, Mike Dewey on behalf of Waste Management. Adam Winston, the General Manager for the region, could not be here. We apologize. Dean Camper is here if you have any questions of a technical nature. In speaking to 631, what you wanted to do, and you have some material in front of you, is we have transitioned the company from diesel trucks to, we're moving to compressed natural gas. And we're doing that for a number of reasons. There could be a nuance at the end of this discussion. The vehicles are lighter, they're quieter, and the environmental effects we have in the material before you are significant in terms of the benefit for compressed natural gas over the typical diesel truck, in terms of a percentage reduction in nitrogen oxide, greenhouse gas emissions, and particulates. So they're all improving the environment. We also have the opportunity, for example, at the Riverbed landfill, where we have methane, to take that into a compressed natural gas. And hopefully at some point in time, we will be able to move in that direction. Albeit today, we're selling electricity to the Finville Power Light system. This goes well with a cost. The first cost, and we're in three phases, is for the fueling station an additional $3.4 million of investment. We have, at the end of the day, when we're fully compliant with code, 48 new compressed natural gas trucks in our fleet on the north side of our franchise area. The trucks are about $30,000, so that's about $50,000 more than the traditional truck that you would buy, which is a diesel truck. The nuance comes here, though, is because we are 40% of the the business about that in the area. Because of higher costs, we're not able to recoup all of those costs in the rate. We understand that. We're not getting any tax incentives here, but it is a nuance that we thought you needed to know about. But we're committed to moving in this direction. We may modify our schedule a little bit because of the extension. We're looking at that, but we are committed to making this transition. And so we're fine with regard to where you're going in the two-year transition. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
So how much of the cost are you recouping in the rates for each truck? What percentage roughly?
Well, I don't. Thank you. We have to go back and take a look at that. As you might know, all of the costs, revenues on one side and expenses are pooled. And so this would be a cost that would be reflected in the rate of return over time. So I can't get to these. There's a number I could get to if I had all the
rates. Yeah, but you're being treated equally as all other haulers are in terms of what they're allowed to recover through the, yeah, the rates
we provide. We are, but albeit our investment is going to be higher initially, so we wouldn't recoup all of that investment in rates because we're less than
that comes on the company's side of the question.
It does, but I think it's important to understand the rates.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm Jake Tanzer, and I'm appearing for Elfin's Delicatessen. And it was just basically my wife's business, and I'm the vice president for Odds and Ends, which this is one. I have sent a letter to the city, and I understand that it's been distributed to you, and I hope that you have read it. It describes the impact of some of the changes that are under consideration upon our business, which are pretty drastic. I'm not going to recover what I said in the letter, but I want to emphasize 2 points. First of all, the two that have been emphasized to us, I'm not speaking comprehensively about everything before you. One was the confidentiality of complainants. I want to tell you that we're not against that. We're not going to kneecap somebody who complains. It's not of interest to us. What it does highlight is we were told about...
That's assuring, Judge. I was a little worried. You put that on the record.
What else is left?
We're flexible.
We're flexible.
But I do want to emphasize that we were told, and I can't vouch for it, we were simply told by the enforcement people that it's a complaint-driven process, the enforcement is. And being complaint-driven, and somebody out of the small complaint about us, we're one of those 19. It creates a situation where it's enforced against us, the trash on the sidewalk equation, but not against our neighbors necessarily. Some of them are against them. No. Depends on somebody is ticked off. We don't block the sidewalks. Originally, the complaint I was told was that some of the delivery trucks on the east side of the building were nosed into the sidewalk. We took care of that. That's no problem. But the location of the bins became the subject of enforcement. But we don't oppose that change. The other, however, is refinements in the two-year process where you essentially buy, the business can buy a couple years before it takes whatever final action is necessary. And that is unrealistic. I want you to, I'm asking that you look at the ordinance side parentheses. I confused ordinances and rules when I responded to it. To me, a rule is an administrative action. Code is the ordinance. So I have some language in that statement. Where was I? The fundamental goal that you have is not garbage. It is, in our instance, the revitalization of the Fosan East Side light industrial area and clearing sidewalks or making easy passage or whatever. A part of that, getting garbage out of there is a part of that. All of that is a part of it. But it also means that you're changing an area to a usage for which it was not built. And that means you're going to have transition problems. Now, the hammer in this two-year process is that you're going to charge the business involved 5, 6, or 7% of its gross income for the privilege of making a transition over time. You know what 5% of a food business is, 5% of the gross? We have tried for 33 years to get 5% gross, and we barely made half of the gross as net. And we've never done it, but we're a successful business. It's gone from 4 to 200 employees, which is what you have asked for us to do in that zone, and why PDC has helped us.
So, sir, I need you to wrap up. I've given you extra time.
I didn't know that my time was limited.
Yes.
Oh, then I will be fast.
It's
that
always,
is destructive.
It's always 3 minutes.
If you're going to have a penalty, then it should be on the net. But call it a penalty, and it's on the net. And we could not have made it through the past 2 years, 3 years, if we had had to pay the cost of correction. You would have destroyed our business by enforcing such an ordinance.
Thanks, sir.
Well, I just want you to know, Judge Panza, that I've done my best to help your business. I buy twice a week the roasted chicken. The best roasted
every
chicken.
Every little bit helps.
Since he raised that, I have to say that's nice. But we actually now brought him in as the new restaurant in the heart of Director Park. Right?
That's outrageous.
You can buy all the chicken you want. He's our newest vendor. So,
you win.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay,
for 632 are David White, Dan Anderson, and Paige Dockman.
Dave White.
Did you call me again? I signed up on
that. Okay, so did you want on this one too? Yeah. No, do not want to say.
So the next,
I already did that one.
We need one more.
Okay. Looks like Dan Anderson and Paige Stockman.
Stockwell. And that's it.
Yeah.
Anyone else wish to testify on this matter?
Mm-hmm.
Marianne?
Yeah, at the very end. Please.
You're come on up. Mr. Anderson, would you like to begin?
Of course. We have to stop moving over. My name is Daniel Anderson, 2144 Northwest Flanders 97210. I've been personally involved in seeking removal of dumpsters from neighborhood sidewalks for about 15 years at this point. I was a member of the council-appointed Crow Task Force. I last came before you on this matter in February of 2011, and at that time, DPS staff told you that a rule would be in place by early summer. They, of course, did not specify the year in which that summer would occur. Clearly, this has not been a highly expeditious process. But we're much closer to completing that process today, and the proposed rule is certainly an improvement on prior efforts, and the Bureau and the Mayor are to be congratulated on that. However, the proposed rule continues to have material weaknesses which should be corrected prior to its being adopted. Allow me to highlight several. The rule as proposed allows either a property owner or a business owner to apply for a hardship exemption one time only. And while the rule does not clearly state that exceptions, if granted, are specific to the site or property, and that a new right to apply for an exemption does not arise out of the sale of the property to a new owner or the leasing of the site to a new business. And by that mechanism, you could have rolling exemptions. And if you think that's a wild hypothetical, that's a problem that the OLCC faces when they attempt to regulate bad actor alcohol licensees. Licensee A sells to his relative B, who sells to his relative C, and so forth. And it becomes quite difficult to police. Second point I would make, in clarifying that the rule is a one-time event to a specific piece of real property, doesn't matter who owns it next, doesn't matter who leases it next. Second, the rule takes too restricted a view as to an applicant's ability to pay in determining financial hardship. Let me give you several examples. The rule considers only applicant gross income in the prior 3 years. If the applicant is newly incorporated, it will have no gross income in prior years. Thus would automatically qualify vis-a-vis the income test. And this would be true, for example, if the applicant were a single-purpose legal entity operating a fast food franchise, one of a dozen such legal entities with a common parent. Similarly, there's no effort to look at balance sheet resources. So an applicant could have no income and $1 million of cash in the bank and claim a hardship. And it would be outside the scope of surveillance of the rule as drafted. Another weakness is with regard to coming up with estimated cost of improvements, there's no effort or provision for policing collusion between applicants and contractors. And collusion in this area and policing it with affidavits of non-collusion is a common strategy which ought to be incorporated in this rule. And finally, the rule makes no effort to distinguish between applications from a single small business operator facing a genuine hardship and applications from an operator or owner of multiple properties where several of the properties have a history of probe violations. It's simply an extra legal business strategy.
I need you to wrap up, sir.
Sure. You ought not create a framework for get-out-of-jail-free cards, and the rule as drafted currently does that. In any event, I think you're making progress. There's a little more technical work that needs to be done on this, and I would encourage you to mandate that additional technical work occur prior to the adoption of the rule. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. My name is Paige Stockwell. I live at 2039 Northwest Irving. So much for confidential. I support.
You're not required to give us your address.
I support a proposal to enforce the prohibition on the storage of refuse containers in the public right-of-way. They are an eyesore and a health hazard. I do not support any kind of exemption from enforcement, whether from so-called extreme hardship or for any other reason. Heat, light, water, and garbage disposal are basic requirements for any enterprise to function. If these requirements cannot be met, then the enterprise should auto, relocate, or cease operating. The proposal envisions an elaborate and time-consuming process to secure an exemption in the program. This is unnecessary, particularly for 19 businesses, and a waste of the city time and resources. The rule should be very simple. Comply within 12 months of enactment of the measure or face meaningful penalties, say $100 a day, whatever, until compliance is achieved. The prohibition should not come as a surprise to everyone. 12 months is plenty of time. I believe the prohibition has been on the city ordinance for more than 100 years and under active discussion for at least the last 4 years. Let's wrap this up now without further delay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Schwab.
I'd like to call point of order. Number one, with this issue here, living in our city with Sunnyside neighborhood and all of our businesses, blocked sidewalks are an issue, whether it be bistro tables, bicycle racks, and good news is that we have moved them onto the street, and I thank you for that. But I would like to, once you vote on this, address number 655. I rushed down here for this, and I understand your schedule today was kind of a little bit flexible because some of you had to leave. I really want to talk about Portland Public Schools and the city relating to the budget support resolution. So if you want to finish this issue, then I would like to read into the record my comments.
Why don't you do that? I'm confused. Are you here to talk about any of these three?
I'm here because I got bumped off your list today because it didn't come in sequence.
Yeah, but so you just want some time to address
I'd like some time.
So unless there's objection. Unless there's objection from the city council, because we did take that earlier, I'll allow you to do that now. So go ahead and take your 3 minutes now.
Thank you. Yes, it was good that we helped save teachers' jobs by means for students and their education.
However, the city could be getting more from the school district. The people of Portland already bought the Foster School site and already bought the land at Washington High School. Please note the IGA deal with the city has no ownership with the Foster School site. Both these parcels should have been given over to the city for housing and parks purposes, respectively. Place the first right of refusal on the 6.66 acres at WAMO provides virtually nothing, and we shouldn't be paying for fair market price for a piece of land that we taxpayers already paid for in 1906. At projected market rate value come 5 years out with a parks bond and plus pay interest on the parks bond, again, for land we already own. It is observed that we could have leveraged private and public dollars to keep the Harriet Tubman Leadership Academy for Young Women School for Girls open. That was one of the most obvious actions for equity in a city, and a school district could have done both. Yet both bodies, PPS Board of Directors, except for 2 members, and City Council, except for Amanda Fritz, voted against equity, against success for these girls and girls of color. Yes, it's embarrassing. In fact, I feel it's shameful. I can't say the taxpayers and city employees who are foregoing their cost of living increases got what they should have in this deal when we gave over $7.5 million to the school districts. Yes, we taxpayers need a community and state-supported educational system. I have a solution, one more time. Might I suggest supporting Oregon Partnership as well as the city and county's lobbyist efforts? Yes, it's time for a dime. Here's your dollars to help free some of our state dollars. Now is the time to make our voices heard in the legislature to increase the frozen 1977 penny a pint production fee. A 10-cent per drink increase would provide more than $80 million a year in prevention, treatment and recovery, and law enforcement training as police officers approach intoxicated and mentally ill individuals. Please, do you know that $9 million of your state dollars are paid into human services each year because of alcohol and drug-related problems? Yes, it's time. The beer industry pays its fair share of the social and economic cost of its product. Until microbrewers produce over X number of barrels, that many increase does not affect their profits. If I were a brewmaster, I would be more concerned monitoring Food and Water Watchers' goals to protect public interest. Whoops, I digress. In closing, I want Portland Public Schools Director to transfer the title to the 1.66 acres to Portland Parks and Recreation for Public Gardens programs. I understand over 1,000 people are in queue for garden space. And the Foster Elementary to NAVA, the Native American Youth Association. The property the public paid for controls ownership in the commons for the next 7 generations. As for PPS plans to sign off on current 99-year leases, let's stay tuned. Let's talk about these issues. Though it's not in the city charter yet, and I don't know where in the comp plan it is, maybe Susan knows, the pen groups are going to have to address saving our public school property in the public commons for the next generations. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. So the next 3. Just a programming note, the only items on a council agenda are the time certain, that we absolutely guarantee time certain. So.
We had one more request from Keith Ristow.
Keith, hi, welcome. Anyone else wish to testify on any of these 3? We're not voting on them today. So, hi, welcome, glad you're here.
Mayor Adams and the council. My name is Keith Ristow. I'm the president of Far West Fibers. We process over 70% of the city of Portland's recycling. And I just wanted to go on the record to say this: since the beginning of the new program, we have received close to 400 tons of extra garbage compared to the same time frame a year before. And we've been working with the city, and it's starting to work, but we feel like putting teeth into it for repeat offenders, people that are putting garbage in their recycling, will really make a difference.
Thank you, sir, very much. Appreciate it. All right, can I have staff? Susan, come up. Someone come up. We're not voting on this today. And we'll get out to all the council all the city commissioners for a discussion of these various pieces. I wanted to make sure that if anybody had additional questions you want us to be researching before we sit down with you individually, that would be helpful to hear now.
Well, Mayor, I'm going to, we get a lot of great briefings from the Bureau, and I'm gonna schedule a supplemental briefing so I can address some questions. And I just would, one concern I have is I know the next week is jammed, and this is technically scheduled to come back next week. Can we put it off a couple of weeks so we all have time to?
Definitely. Yeah, the Rose Festival takes up a lot of my time this week, so that, I would appreciate that suggestion. So I'll continue it for 2 weeks on the normal agenda, regular agenda. So
each item or just one?
Each item.
Each item.
Yeah, we'll do each one.
Thank you.
All three. So unless there are objections, it comes back in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, we'll confer with everybody individually. Thank you for the initial hearing. All right, what does that get us to?
We are on 656.
Can you please read the title for 656?
Authorize a contract with the Portland Business Alliance to provide policing services for the Clean and Safe program.
All right, so we have staff here to provide an overview of what we're looking at. Coming up. For those of you that don't know, Commander Day of Central Precinct, that includes much of the downtown area and beyond. Thanks for your good work. What are you looking at here?
Thanks. Well, this is an ordinance that we're asking be approved. It's in, been an agreement that we've had with the PBA going back to 1997. It's really a force multiplier for us downtown. And the PBA agrees to cover the costs of the four additional officers as assigned to the Clean and Safe District. And we find that to be a huge resource to us and being able to go ahead and focus on that really concentrated area where about 125,000 people a day come down Monday through Friday in that district alone. So having them as a resource, and as a Central Precinct Commander, they still report to me. We still have a sergeant who oversees them, so there's still accountability within the police bureau. But it does provide us with additional bodies to be able to address just the livability issues that we face downtown. So appreciate your support.
I have a few questions here.
Go ahead. Commander, welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for all your outstanding work in helping the Parks Bureau launch its Rangers program.
Yes, sir.
And I have three questions. The first is, based on our decision to take a limited amount of money invested in Rangers, so we had more of a presence day-to-day in the parks, in the downtown parks, do you have a view as to how the system is currently meshing between Clean and Safe and the Rangers?
Well, in regards to Clean and Safe, I don't want to speak directly for them. I can speak for the police bureau, and that we continue to, you know, work with the Rangers. Just this morning, in fact, you know, meeting with them out in front of the Justice Center. It seems to be good communication that's occurring there in support of their efforts. You know, we're still early on, but it seems to be working.
We appreciate the fact that there's actually a direct line of communication to from the Rangers to the dispatch bureau. This the proposal before us is for a term of 5 years with the potential extension of up to 10 years, apparently coming back to council. Can you explain that?
Well, I think that the reasoning behind that being that, you know, this is a program that's proven effectiveness, like I said, going back over 15 years now, nearly. So I think the idea behind that is to try and just continue in that process, something that works and works well. So that would be the reasoning behind it.
So, Mayor Adams, I would certainly support a 5-year extension, but I would prefer this come back to council.